Welcome to... Hey guys, can you keep it down? I'm trying to record a podcast over here. Oh, there we go. Sorry about all that noise. I'm a project manager at a construction site building the internet. No, seriously. I'm focused on data center construction with a passion for electrical mechanical systems. Enough about me, though. Welcome to the podcast, Doing Girly Things, a podcast focused on breaking down the stereotypes surrounding construction, engineering, and other STEM-related fields and making them girly things to do. In this podcast, I answer all the questions I've been asked as an engineer about how things work in personal stories from people in these positions. This podcast focuses on answering questions from professionals, authors, and even a sexologist. I'll be interviewing men and women to talk about topics, how to effectively communicate in the workplace, and what does fashion have to do with engineering. Lastly, before we start the episode, I would love to introduce my weekly newsletter. Go to Doing Girly Things to join the weekly toolbox talk. This letter will be a 10-minute read in your inbox for a weekly update on what Doing Girly Things is up to. This is my way of trying to beat the algorithm and deliver content to people that actually want to read it. In the newsletter, you'll gain knowledge about basic construction topics, clips and quotes from the episode, resources, and of course, the cute silhouette I make for each guest. Go to my website, Doing Girly Things with 1G, to sign up. Hope to see you there. And if a weekly newsletter isn't your thing, always feel free to like and subscribe on the app that you are listening to, or head over to Instagram and you can see all of the content there that we've been producing over the last couple months. Now, time for the episode.
So the one thing that I didn't, there's a lot of things I didn't say, but a thing that I didn't say was this: a PH04 in particular is a big team effort. It really is. And it's been a combination of all of our talents that has made it happen. Like, I bring the hardware part to the experiment. I literally prepare the media that the plants grow in, the fertilizer, created the wicks, 3D printed the parts, all that stuff, assembled it, glued the seeds in place. And then, of course, I'm the local New Mexico chili expert because I'm from New Mexico. But the true story, the story that you really don't hear enough, I think, is the story of the seed and what Lachelle Spencer did with them. So you have to sanitize these seeds to send them to space. The International Space Station, and the whole problem with growing plants up until of recently has been that there were concerns about microbiology invading the environment, especially like pathogens and stuff. And could our plants introduce pathogens to the space station environment? That's why our team is largely microbiologists, because they're working that problem to show that it's to grow plants in these sterile environments. And one way that allows those plants to be sterile is to sanitize the seeds before. And it's just crazy that you would expose seeds to something like 70% ethanol, or that you would like autoclave them or do something crazy. Bleach. Some people bleach in water. Expose seeds to some type of sanitization and then store it and grow them later. I never understood this, but so Lachelle Spencer and her team had to prepare sterilized seeds. It turns out either it was because we're the source of our peppers. We got them from the New Mexico Chili Pepper Institute, which we visited, Megan.
Yeah.
And we made that contact there. We got the seeds from there, and those are the seeds that we're growing. Well, she sanitized them and found out that they're dirtier than, for whatever reason. And they had to do this crazy sanitization effort to get them to be to a point where they would go on to the International Space Station. The only problem is that it killed the viability of the pepper seeds. So literally, they did a down select of 1,000 seeds to get 10% of them that grow at 90% germination rate. So she sanitized the seeds. And then went through this like crazy germination test of a whole bunch of sets to make sure that we have the best chance to grow peppers up there. And that'll be like the unsung story or the unsung hero of the whole experiment. Because I could set up all this equipment and all this stuff all I want. But if the seeds won't grow, then we're not going anywhere and nothing's going to happen without the seeds. So
when you say germination test, just describe to me what that means. Welcome to the podcast, Doing Girly Things. Today, I have a special guest, Jacob. Jacob is one of my close friends. We met in grad school. And so Jacob and I met, we both worked in a research lab. And in that research lab, we had cool things like growth chambers and solar panels and heat pumps on the roof to help heat and cool the building based off the air temperature outside. And there was so much cool stuff. And Jacob has now gone to go and work at NASA and continue to do his research on growth chambers, but this time growth chambers in space. So Jacob is on and he is going to tell us about flying plants to Mars and all the details. So Mars is 177 million miles away, and it actually got its name from an ancient Roman god of war. And it got its name from that because of the redness that it has. And so the redness made them name it ancient Roman god of war. And so with those fun facts, I would like to introduce Jacob. Jacob, you started out being a punk troublemaker, and now you're here working at NASA.
That's the only way to do it. The only way to do it is to have fun while you're young and then get down to when you're a little bit older.
So exactly. So let's talk about the experiences that you had. So first you were at Cummins, you were working, and then all of a sudden you had this wild hair that you wanted to go to Purdue University. And so at Purdue University, you were able to get the experience of growth chambers. So let's start there. Let's talk about that.
I think it's wild how, one, you remember all of that stuff that was in the lab, the applied energy lab, right? Professor Hutzel on the fourth floor, he had solar panels. You know what? We happened to be there during a solar panel transition. Mm-hmm. That only happens like every 10 to 15 years, right?
Yeah, and exactly. So it's exciting.
It was exciting. And one thing that we did was worked on the biowall. And the biowall used automation, or a building automated system, BAS, to control the lighting and the humidity, the temperature, and record trend data and all that stuff, irrigate the plants, and essentially it filtered air, right? Well, it turns out that there's this amazing team at Kennedy Space Center who are growing plants. They're doing the same exact thing. They're using automation and technology. And instead of filtering air like we were at Purdue, they're growing crops to feed astronauts on Mars, or on the way to Mars, on the moon, and even on the International Space Station. So it's amazing the things that we experienced at school and how they apply to everything.
It's crazy to think, too, that what you're doing is so similar to what we were doing in lab, because in lab we had these growth chambers, and like growth chambers are basically just an isolated room that you condition to be a set temperature, a set humidity. And so,
well, we can't do zero gravity on Earth. We can't escape the gravity constant. Mm-hmm. And so that's a big problem for us, because one of our biggest issues of growing plants without gravity or in space is delivering the water and the nutrients to the roots. How do you get water to the roots without it floating all over the place? How do you contain the soil and the growth media in one spot? You really don't know until you launch it up to space how your technology is going to work. You have a few ways here on Earth to simulate microgravity. You can drop something off of a big building and you will experience weightlessness while it falls. Not long enough to grow a plant. There's what they call the vomit comet. The vomit comet goes up and down in a parabola, up and down. And while it's going down, you get maybe a minute and a half of weightlessness. And you can do tests and stuff like that. But for us, growing plants and the irrigation systems and all those things, we don't know how they're going to work until we get up there into space. And so it's all about using our experiences, the things that we did, even the small things, the tools that we learned how to use while we worked on the solar panels on the roof, you know, at Purdue. I know how that screwdriver works, you know, or whatever. Just like, it's amazing. All the things that we're doing, the work that I do is like, you can only predict how it's going to happen using your experience. And in the end, all you can do is back and watch.
So that brings us to what you are doing. So right now, what Jacob's doing at NASA is he is researching not just any plants, but the Espanola improved plants, the chili pepper plant. So very exciting. Jacob and I went on a road trip around New Mexico. And so if you don't know anything about New Mexico, there is tons and tons of chili peppers grown there. And with all of these chili peppers, there's kind of a little bit of a competition. Who has the best chili pepper? So
that's green chili.
So we went on a road trip all around collecting seeds. And so that was 2 or 3 years ago. That was 2 years ago.
It was 2019. It was Hatch Fest 2019. My colleague, Lachelle Spencer, who's a the lead horticulturist at Kennedy Space Center, anything that grows in space goes to her first. Her and I are working on this experiment called PH04, and PH stands for Plant Habitat, which is the advanced plant habitat on the International Space Station. And 04 is the fourth experiment or the fourth grow out that's been done in that chamber. And NASA put some funding aside for Lachelle and I to go to New Mexico, visit where the cultivar is from, and learn what we can from local farmers and the local industry, what it would take to grow those peppers successfully in space, in particular, on the International Space Station. So you joined us, and we met in Albuquerque, and we started up north. You can look at New Mexico as a really unique state, because the northern part is still the Rocky Mountains. It's a mile high or more, and that's where Espanola is. That's where I'm from and my mom lives. But the southern part of the state is just near sea level, and it's desert and dry. And in between there are farmers who are growing a chili crop, which used to be like the same chili pepper, but now it's been grown in these diverse environments for generations. They've all become their own unique cultivar. And so you and I got to go, and Lachelle and her husband Phil got to go around and visit all of those farmers and learn what we can about how they grew their peppers. And it was really cool. That was already 2 years ago.
Yeah, and it was really cool for you guys being the scientists, because you're so used to growing these plants in these controlled environments. And so you kind of take the natural part away from it. For example, part of what Jacob does is he has this Facebook group that where you can actually be a part of the Grow a Chili Pepper Challenge.
Chili Grow a Pepper Challenge. Sure, that's all you need is one. And you know what? We're planting 48 seeds to get one plant. That's all we want. So our success criteria is to get one plant, and if we harvest a pepper or more, that would be like completely success for us. So you are right on NASA level right now, Megan. You're on point.
But with that, what are you, Jacob? Where you said that you have 48 plants. So where are these 48 plants going? And tell us a little bit more of that. About that.
For sure. When you send or grow plants up in space, you couldn't use a regular pot and throw soil in there, because the soil will fly. It'll float away. You have to make a special container or a special method that'll hold the growth media and a wick with seeds for them to grow. And so before my time, the NASA team created a system called the Advanced Plant Habitat. They flew it up to the International Space Station, and essentially it's about the size of a refrigerator, and that's what it is. It controls the temperature, humidity, lighting, irrigation, you name it. It records trend data. It has cameras on the overhead and on the side. And so you were able to grow crops in there in a microgravity environment to learn what it takes, the science and the techniques that it takes to grow crops. Our mission ultimately is to supplement the astronaut diets when they go on deep space missions or trips to the moon and Mars. And the reason is there's prepackaged meals that NASA prepares for the crew, but there's nutrients and vitamins that are in them that have half-lives and they degrade a little bit over time. And if you're thinking about going to Mars, you said some great facts in the beginning about Mars, in fact. Another thing is that the rotation around the sun is not a perfect circle. It's more elliptical. So the distance and the time that it would take a crew to get from Earth to Mars would vary depending on when they left. So it could be a 6-month trip or it can be a 2-year trip. And so by the time they get to the surface of Mars and they need those vitamins, they need those nutrients to set up, you know, their Mars greenhouse and do the science and all that stuff, their meals won't have it. So what did NASA do? They put their minds together. How are we going to make up this deficit in calories and meals? Also, is there a way to get fresh food to them? You know, the food is really good, but it's freeze dried. And so it's good to have something fresh. And ultimately, it was a no-brainer, I think, that growing plants was the way to go. On the International Space Station now is where we have a growth platform just to learn what it takes. You know, what does it require to water a plant, to grow it into maturity? What kind of lighting, how much nutrients, and all of these things. We grow about 6 plants at a time. Or in this case, for PHO4, we planted 48 seeds in this thing called the science carrier. And the science carrier is essentially a box with 48 holes poked in top of it. And you place a seed in each one of those holes. You orient the seeds in a way that helps direct the radical or the root towards the growth media. And then the cotyledons or the little sprout part up to the light, because there is no gravity up there. And, you know, plants have evolved to use gravity as their compass. So that is kind of part of the science to see if the peppers will even grow in space. Mm-hmm. You know, you see how they hang down here. What are the peppers going to do in space? The peppers hang down, you know, here because gravity's pulling on them. Mm-hmm. Will they grow straight up? Are they going to just float there? You know, and that's the crazy thing is, you know, Lachelle and I and the team have done all of this work. We went to New Mexico. We grew peppers in the lab. We learned very much what you just said was that we are growing in this artificial environment, but this is a natural thing. And how do you bring nature together with technology? And we kind of have to figure that out. And that's, you know, it's just us, my little team working on it. This type of riddle needs more people, more hands, more minds working on it. And that's where the idea for the Space Chili Grow a Pepper Plant Challenge came from, was I thought, you know, hey, there are other people who would be interested in doing this. And essentially that's what we've done. We've created an army of researchers. Anybody can email me at jt@nasa@aol.com and request your seeds. I'll mail Chimayo, New Mexico Chimayo seeds to you and give you a little bit of help, but I didn't give you any help, right, Megan? You did it all kind of by yourself.
The only help that you really gave me was you did post which LED light you were using, and it ended up being on sale on Amazon, and I was like, yeah, I'll get, because Jacob has this one, I'll get this one too. And then, I mean, really, no help at all. But the cool thing about the Facebook group is if you want help, there'll be somebody in the group that would help you. But there's cool things like chili cook-off challenges that people are having. And there's people cooking their meals. And so it really has become a community project with the whole Facebook group. And it really is a nice way to connect with what they're doing in space, but also people growing on Earth too.
Absolutely. Space farming isn't only growing in space on the International Space Station, but it's growing in your space where you are living. Mm-hmm. And when I was at school, At Purdue, I had this 150 square foot apartment there in Lafayette. To me, I felt like I was in a space capsule and I would have to grow plants vertically so I can grow my plants and stuff. So to me, the thought of space farming has always just been like the area that I live in and that we live in, mm-hmm. not what the astronauts are. You know, it's using your space that you have in a way to grow crops or do things, you know, that supports your life and that brings nature into you and whatever it takes to make you feel happy and feel good. You know, and for me, it's growing plants. I love nature and beautiful green things, but I'm an engineer and a scientist, so I love automation and technology and that stuff too. And that's kind of my role, is exactly what I just said, is I'm one person who can bring those two together, and it's been my success so far. Yeah.
And that's awesome. And so with the peppers on the International Space Station, can you actually view like a live stream, or how do you watch your experiments after you launch them?
Sure. So there's the thing too about launching things to space. It takes time. And so what is launched up there was the APH. It's probably using 2014 technology. Even the LED lighting and everything. Imagine where lighting technology has been since then, just in the 5 years and whatever. You have equipment that takes a while to get up there, and we have an overhead camera and we have a side camera, and we're able to take as many pictures as we want and then downlink them and take a look at them. But in general, there's a delay. We probably would get to see them every 12 hours because they would come down through Johnson Space Center, get approval, and then shared with us. And then we get to take a look at them. And then that's what, you know, my team who has experience with growing flight plants experiments in Veggie, which is our other growth system, and the original growth system, was they would see pictures, but growing the plants weren't exactly the priority for Scott Kelly. So, hey, can you turn on that fan, or can you add a little bit of extra water to number two, is not just a simple request. You know, you're asking an astronaut to do that, and it's just amazing. So there's great stories out there about the space zinnias. They were grown in Veggie. One of our lead scientists, Dr. Joya Massa, she wanted to be a scientist since she was a kid, and she wrote a letter to Ray Wheeler. Ray Wheeler is who he did the potato experiments. So anybody who's watched or seen the movie The Martian can Google Ray Wheeler and see where the real potato experiments come from. And he is pretty much, I get to work with him and I get to work with Joya, but they share and show how hard it is to grow plants and have a need and make a request to have an astronaut do whatever it is. It's
That movie is awesome, by the way. If anybody has not watched that movie, you should definitely take, I don't watch a lot of TV, probably watched 4 hours of TV this year, no joke. And I would probably consider watching that movie again.
It's cool, huh? The only thing, it's all kind of accurate except for you really could not grow plants directly in the Mars regolith. And it's not soil, but the red stuff that you see is what we call regolith. And it, from the Curiosity rover that was here before Perseverance, detected that there were perchlorates in the samples of soil or regolith that it took. So, if we grew plants in them, it could make us sick, kind of thing. So we have a problem with using Martian regolith to grow plants. And that's another kind of thing that I work on. And that's part of the dynamic of our team and anybody's team in the industry of anywhere. But you're working for the now, the things that are in front of you, the projects that are happening right now. But then you're also working for the future and, you know, what's to come 5, even 10 years from now. So, you know, right now my brain is building things for the International Space Station. We're doing PHO4. We're introducing 3D printing and new materials to the International Space Station lab. At the same time, I'm writing proposals for technologies to go to Mars and to go to the moon and stuff. And so that's the big thing about anybody who's doing a career, is absorbing that dynamic of being multifaceted and thinking on different planes and different timelines.
I love how you interchangeably use these words, but I don't think many normal people know the difference. But there's a difference between the space center and the space station.
Ooh, great.
And
thank you.
I would love for you to explain that because I didn't know anything about that difference until actually our road trip. So if you could kind of explain the two.
I appreciate that question so much. Thank you. Oh, Megan, that's awesome. So because NASA is a government agency and it's funded by the U.S. federal government, people who support that funding or supply that funding are the senators and the Congress people from the different districts. And the way to keep that funding fair was every state has a center, a NASA Space Center. So I work at Kennedy Space Center, which is in Florida. In Texas has Johnson Space Center, which is where Mission Space Command is at. Those are the most famous ones. But every state has their own space center where NASA sets up their shop and does whatever their research is. In New Mexico is White Sands. And then the space station is the International Space Station is in orbit or low Earth orbit. They call it LEO, L-E-O, low Earth orbit. The International Space Station circles around the Earth at, you know, a couple thousand miles an hour in weightlessness and it's a science lab that is in weightlessness supporting around the Earth and stuff.
There's all other experiments there too, isn't there?
Currently, how many countries are involved? But I think there was 8 at one point and there may even be more. But they all, not all, but many of them send their own crew members up there. And so there's the American quarters, and there's the Japanese quarters, the Canadian quarters, where they have their own area to do their own science. And the majority of the science are other things like like some biology, but fluid behavior, mechanics, all of that other stuff. Growing plants isn't new per se, but it's new like in a formal way. And I guess, before we were able to launch seeds up pretty easily because seeds don't weigh anything and whatever, but doing long period grow outs where it takes 4 weeks to grow lettuce or like we're going to go peppers, it could take 120 days or more. Staying that long up in low Earth orbit in weightlessness has not been a thing that you've been able to do and grow plants in before. So the growing plants for a long period is a new thing. And these peppers will be the first time that we have attempted to do a long-term grow out. It will be the first fruit grown in space. And at least the first attempt to grow a fruit in space, the first pollinating plant, and the longest grow out as of yet. But there are many things in store, though. NASA has PHO up to PHO 7, I think, planned. And I'm getting to work on all of them.
But what are you hoping to discover with this first round of experiments? What's your biggest hypothesis you're hoping for?
Sure. Well, I'm an engineer, and if my whole thesis was a technical demonstration of the biowall at Purdue. I really didn't do much science, but I demonstrated that system. I improved on it, documented it, and recorded it. So essentially, I did this great technical demonstration as a thesis topic. Well, PHO4 is exactly that. It's pretty much fitting that PHO4 is more a technical demonstration of the advanced plant habitat and our technology that we created, the 3D printed wicks, the media, the fertilizer, all of those things, the lighting camera, all of these things that we've implemented. It's essentially a technical demonstration to show the world that we can do this. We can grow a long-term plant. We can do a flowering crop. We can have fruit. And, you know, the long-term plan to supplement an astronaut's diet is definitely possible. And then we'll go on to other experiments. PHO5 will grow Arabidopsis. We'll grow it up to a certain stage so it flowers and we capture the seeds and bring the seeds back to analyze them to see if there are any mutations due to radiation and other things. There's, you know, the whole question whether we can even grow plants when we go to the moon or Mars because, here on Earth and even in low Earth orbit, we have protection from the magnetic sphere. We have protection from the radiation coming from the sun and space. But what happens when we leave the protection of Earth? Will seeds still grow after being exposed to the radiation? Can people live long-term on the moon or in other places? So far, we've only done what NASA calls a camping trip to the moon several times. And we drove a car a few times and stuff. But now we want to go back and stay. But will our bodies withstand the radiation? Will the plants and the seeds be able to? We just don't know. And that's the whole exploration. That's really what we want to.
And so we touched on it because I was actually expecting you to answer that question with the roots grow and everything. So we touched on it just a little bit, but and we talked about how the astronauts, you know, it's kind of hard to get people to water them, and your background's building automation. So how do you tie all of that into watering and keeping the plants alive on the International Space Station?
Jeez, that is the hardest thing, Megan. It really is the completely why I'm here. And I'm just one person, but there are great minds across this nation and the world who are working on exactly that problem, that issue. How do you irrigate a plant? When do you irrigate a plant in space? Currently, Veggie has the Veggie Pillow. It has a syringe connection or a QD, a quick disconnect, what they call it. And you can connect a syringe of water and the astronaut will physically go and inject DI water. Deionized water into the Veggie Pillow. So for Veggie, the very first experiments, they were hand watered, what we call baby fed. And those would be short term grow outs, a couple weeks, maybe 28 days kind of thing. But now with the advanced plant habitat, we're able to control, you know, of course, you can control a pump to irrigate at a certain time, or we're playing with including a moisture sensor that detects when the plants need water or when they don't. That's cool, the automation we're able to do. The whole riddle, the whole problem is in fluid, controlling the fluid and making it go and stay where you need it to stay. How do you do that in space? Big riddle. And there are actually call-outs where if you have an idea how you think you can irrigate plants in space, there's the NASA Deep Space Food Challenge, which is taking proposals now for anybody who has an idea of how to irrigate plants in space. And I think the initial round is $25,000 to make your first prototype, and it's very doable, very much so.
So cool. Nice.
But I just throw in real quick the name Mark Weislogel. He made this coffee cup for the International Space Station. And so you can take a look at that coffee cup and then think about watering plants in space. And I think that in my mind, I think that's the direction is geometries and adapting to the environment that we're in and not stop using boxes that we use here on Earth. We like to use boxes as reservoirs and things like that because they work great. But in space, you're in a new environment and you have to adapt to it. And I think that geometry is going to be the secret.
And that's really cool too, that to reach out to the public in that sense to get proposals, but also the sense of that people are already doing it. Because I actually, Jacob, really thought that it was just you sometimes.
Right. And I'll make it seem like it.
I also want to talk about was the other machine. So you had sent me this machine. We talked about microgravity and like how to simulate it. And one of the coolest inventions that you sent me was the random, I'm going to mess up the name, but random. And so it changes position. So I'll put a link in here, but like
position machine.
Yes. Random position machine. And basically to help simulate no gravity, this machine just randomly moves. And so if you randomly move, you're simulating like no direction. And so if you could just kind of explain that and just anything else, that was the last I saw of it. Yeah.
Sure. Well, I guess, you know, I didn't finish the thought on simulation of microgravity here on Earth. You can't escape the gravity constant, but we can try and we can simulate it. And one thought mathematically is if you continuously variate the gravity vector You can simulate microgravity. Mathematically, it cancels out. So they've made this machine, but the truth is that there still is gravity there. You've just eliminated it over time, but we're able to do plant growth experiments on them. Build hardware that fits in this machine, and then we can, and so we think that microgreens have a place in space biology, and growing on Mars, because they grow very quick. If you land on Mars, you want something fresh, like pretty fast. So microgreens will grow in 5 to 8 days, and you'll have something fresh to eat that tastes really good. So we think microgreens is a good thing to start with. And then you grow lettuce and peppers in the long term, and it turns into this just great, you know, supply of constant harvest, great food all the time. But we're simulating growing microgreens here on the random position machine, and I get to create irrigation or equipment that goes on this machine. The rule is that if you stop the machine, it's a failed experiment. So I have an irrigation system. It's passive, which means it's just a box with wicks dipping into it. And the reason it's like that is because this machine is constantly moving, and I can't hook up pumps and irrigation things to it. Essentially, I refill it in motion, and that's how I escape stopping the machine and canceling the whole thing out. And we're able to see that this system works on this machine while it's randomly rotating. And it's turning out that it could be a good test for microgravity and seeing how things would potentially behave if they got sent to space. The way the machine rotates is actually kind of harder on them. So bottom line, we started with microgreens, and then I envision hopefully one day maybe growing a pepper plant in there.
I have a question. If you successfully grow a pepper plant on this trip, would the astronauts that are up at the space station be able to eat it?
Yes, I'm pretty sure that we finally got approval for it. And this is where Lachelle Spencer comes into the picture, and then the microbiology team. 85% of my team are microbiologists and geneticists and stuff. So
really?
The small stuff. Yep. Mm-hmm. The small percentage who are a scientist. Lachelle is the only horticulturist from my team. We're part of a contract. We're contracted by NASA. The contract is named LASSO, LASSO, and we support NASA and their ambitions to do this plant space biology. They fulfill the proposals to get the money, and we implement the mission. Whatever it is, whatever they want us to do, we do it. And so it kind of, you know, just turned out this way. But Lachelle Spencer and their team did an extensive study on the food safety of a pepper, especially in that type of environment. And I supported the plant growth through all of the tests. They would come in once a week and take micro samples, or take a sample from the pepper and from different spots throughout the grow out, take them back and do studies on them. And ultimately they determined that those peppers are food safe. And if we are able to successfully grow peppers, chili, New Mexico chili in space, the astronauts will be able to eat one if they would like.
Oh, that is so cool. That is so cool that yeah. They would be able to eat them. And I am picturing in my head them chopping them up and putting that, like, because I imagine you don't really have things that you're adding, like salt and seasoning to your food. So I imagine that you get to this point where some people experienced this past year with losing their taste and losing their smell. Is you kind of like, you know, every, like, with just being able to taste something that has flavor is just such a nice thing. If I were an astronaut, you know, you'd be looking forward to a little bit of spice.
Yes, for sure. You got it. Exactly. I didn't even have to mention, but part of not having gravity means that, you know, some of the fluids that usually flow through your body, they flow in different ways. And the astronauts report having the feeling of a head cold. And that's because there's more blood in the head, because gravity isn't pulling down on it. And everything that comes with the cold comes with that. So they report, you know, losing their taste and having, you know, a runny nose. I also have a hard time with vision because the blood pressure squeezes the back of the cornea. And so they report some vision issues sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so peppers are great for all of that.
That is true. Yeah. With like the high vitamin C and everything, it's like
the spiciness, right? It has creatine for your vision. It's in this perfect little container that you can kind of eat at any time.
Exactly. And I am excited. So part of my grow a chili pepper challenge that I'm doing is I'm trying to grow salsa indoors. And so I'm trying to prove that – so I only live in 600 square feet in downtown Portland. And so I grew up on a huge plot of land that had tons of garden space. Uh-huh. And so awesome. I am trying to prove that you can grow anything wherever you're at. So with the peppers that I have, I'm going to start growing the cilantro at my desk at home. I got a grow light for my desk. I showed it to you. And if you look at my Instagram, you can see it. And some of the peppers here and tomatoes. And I'm honestly think I might try to grow an onion. I just want to try it. And
cool. So, do it. You can do it. You can grow an onion. Definitely do it. I would love to see it. The salsa bar, fresh. Yes, totally.
Oh my gosh, that's so perfect. The salsa bar.
Yes, oh my God. I love it. You can grow tomatoes and peppers, onions. Oh, I'm so excited. Mm-hmm. I love cilantro.
Exactly.
I didn't even think about that. My goodness. You can do it. Yep. Add tomatoes onto that. I think tomatoes is PHO6. So you can tie it to that one.
Oh my goodness, that's exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. Yes, oh, I can't wait. We've been growing peppers tomatoes for a while too. They are very close. They're related, peppers and tomatoes. They're easily pollinated. That's another reason. I can go off for days reasons why the pepper is the one that we're growing first. But one of the main things is because it's easy to pollinate a pepper plant. You don't have to transfer pollen from one flower to another. In this case, you just shake the flower and it pollinates it. So we're lucky there, and tomatoes do the same kind of thing. So that works out good for space biology and us, because it's hard to ask an astronaut or get astronaut time to go and pollinate flowers and stuff. Here now, we're going to try something that we've done here on Earth, and I think we can do it in space. But we've been ramping the fan up and down to shake the flowers to pollinate them without having a human interaction, and it's worked here in the ground units twice, and so we're going to try it in space. But yeah, that's another qualifier, and I can go off forever.
That's pretty good. So how should I pollinate my pepper plant at home?
Tap to pollinate. Just tap whenever you see flowers, just tap. And if you look close enough, you'll see some pollen fall down. And in the next day or two, you'll have a pepper plant. But you don't have to do anything special. Just tap on the flower once you get there. The hard thing is to get a flower. And many times, everybody can grow the initial start, or the initial part of growing a pepper plant is not hard to do. You plant the seed, takes about 7 to 10 days for it to start to grow, and then you'll have it growing there, just the two leaves, and you can leave it like that for months, I've found. Just the two cotyledons, or the initial leaves that come out. But you have to ultimately, you're an engineer, we're engineers in the law of conservation. You get in without, or you get out what you put in, right? You can never get 110% out. So you have to input nutrients to get flowers to grow, or lighting, which you got a very good light, which will work really good and stuff. And so that's where it gets tricky, is understanding what the plant is asking for and what it needs, and then creating whatever system it is, or turning it on if it exists, to make that happen. So like, oh, that plant looks sad. Turn the irrigation on, or
you need water.
These guys, yeah, or these, I'm telling you, these scientists that I work with, they're just like amazing. I can't even understand. But they will tell you, no, that's about, a little bit of far red spectrum that's missing whatever. They'll call out a specific spectrum from the light recipe. And they'll be able to tell you that that plant is deficit in that area from that type of light wavelength. And it's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And I'll be like, what? No, a light's a light. Whatever. Come on. And you make that change, you do the next grow out, and unbelievably, they were absolutely right.
They were right.
And I just have no idea how they know those things. I work with some really amazing, I guess they're biologists and microbiologists, and I'm an engineer, and our chains of thoughts are a little bit different, I think.
Well, it's awesome that you work on such a diverse team too, so that way then you get to work with scientists and they get to work with an engineer, and then you kind of are just feeding off of each other, so you get the end result on kind of a mixed team.
Yes, absolutely. We do, and one thing I've learned is we can't do it all alone. And many times it takes multiple minds to get something done. And I personally like to work alone or do things by myself. But it turns out that when you're really clicking with some teammates, you can do some amazing things. And so teamwork has just been like the key to all of these things. And if and when we are successful here in the future, it'll be because we all work together in this amazing team, and our leadership, or you know, the people who are steering the ship, are smart enough to bring in this diverse team in stuff, you know. So it's ultimately NASA who's driving the ship, and they're the ones who gave me the job and Lachelle the job and all that stuff. So I can really say that they know what they're doing. And I'm just happy to be a part of it. I really am.
And I am so happy that you have been a part of it, that you have let me be a part of it, and that you created your Facebook group so everyone could be a part of the Grow a Space Chili Challenge.
Yes,
but
absolutely.
I do have a final game for us to play. So okay. I got these cards, and they are called Best Self cards. And so I really like to use them because awesome to kind of connect with people. And so I have two categories for you, and you get to pick one. Dreams or courage?
Okay. Dreams.
Fast forward 20 years. What does life look like now?
Life looks like I'm a NASA PI. And I'm doing moon experiments on the moon, growing plants or doing experimentation on the moon.
That's awesome.
Or have already done, yeah.
That's awesome.
At the very least.
At the very least, you know, I think at the very least that will happen. But Jacob, I am so happy that you came on the podcast today and we got to talk about PHO4 and we got to talk about the Space Chili Grow a Challenge. And I am just so happy that my plants are growing and that the sunshine in Portland is out today and all of the wonderful things. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for participating in the Space Chili Grow Pepper Plant Challenge, Megan. It means so much. Just keep watering your plant, keep it going. If it's not growing the way you want it, you just have to keep trying, and it will respond. So thank you, Megan, for having me. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And last time, in case anybody wants to find you, email you, join the group, how can we join the challenge, Jacob?
Cool. You can email me directly, jt@nasa@aol.com, and request seeds. I'll respond with the introduction to the Space Chili Grow Pepper Plant Challenge. Or you can go to the Facebook page and just go to the search bar and type in the Space Chili Challenge. It'll come up. You can also Google the Space Chili Challenge. And we're on just about every platform, Instagram, Twitter. And those are the only ones that are coming on. But there's things going on that I don't even know.
And if you follow me, you can watch my one little plant growing in Portland, Oregon, and watch me grow some salsa. So
Yay!
thank you. And
thank you.